The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Alongside that, you get a £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Patrick Gibbons and today I'm joined by the Spectator's political editor Katie Balls and former political secretary to Tony Blair, John McTernan. The future of British Steel continues to dominate the news during Easter recess. At the start of the day, there was some confusion about the raw materials needed to keep the site going, but the government has confirmed that they've secured them. Visiting the site in Scunthorpe today, Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner was able to say that the furnaces would continue to burn. But the question remains for how long. John, the government have been quite confident over their handling of the crisis. Is Rayner's visit a further show of this?
Yes, I think so. And you've got a government now which has shown confidence internationally over Ukraine, over the relationships with President Trump, cutting aid to put into defence, all kinds of things, real confidence internationally. Now I'm starting to see some confidence about its position domestically. Not afraid to nationalise. The nationalisation of the railways was expected. Nationalising steel, not so much. And it's a sign that Labour will define the national interest in a very nationalist way, patriotic way as well. And it's good to see, actually. And it shows you, once again, the influence of the unions on this Labour government. The unions were the people who got the pay rise, immediate pay rises from Rachel Reeves last year. The unions are who got new rights from Angela Rayner in her bill that's going through Parliament. And now community, one of the most moderate unions in the Labour Party, is getting one of its desires, which is the maintenance of steel with the guarantee, a government guarantee, a guarantee of nationalisation underpinning it.
Just on the unions, Rayner said that they've been very happy with the government's response so far. So what sort of discussions have been going on behind the scenes?
There's been discussions with the unions about steel for the last 2.5 years. Obviously, until July, those discussions were Labour as an opposition being briefed by unions on rescue plans for all the steelworks which are under pressure. What there has been now is the unions who supported Keir through thick and through thin, supported Tony through thick and through thin, support all the moderate leaders of the Labour Party community are getting something back. They're getting back a cashable demand. Let's keep steel production in Britain and in public hands if necessary. And I think that pragmatism, maybe it's almost Blairite, you know, what matters is what works.
Mm. And Katie, for all the talk of Labour's direction since the election, will the government be quite happy that this is something tangible they can point to reassure their traditional base?
I think so. And also, if you think about the timing of the Saturday sitting. Now, of course, the line from the government is they only realised later in the week that they needed to make this decision. Mm-hmm. But I also think it can be true that some in Number 10 are quite happy with the dramatics of summoning MPs back. That's how much we care about British industry. And I think there is a political strategy element to this too. Now, Labour still, I think, have questions to answer on industrialisation, on if you think about, you know, some of the other areas, Grangemouth, if you think about Port Talbot. This is an area where Reform and Nigel Farage have really been pressing Labour, and an area where they think that they can have a lead, already have a lead over Labour, and can pick up votes. There's also questions about how this fits with Labour's net zero strategy, questions about the prioritisation going forward. But certainly, I think you can look at some of the rhetoric around this, the desire to address it, but also to lean into the publicity, does show that this is something Labour wants to own the territory on once again.
Mm. John, you know, no one wants a crisis necessarily, but it's not unhelpful to Labour that this is happening, say, 2.5 weeks out from the local elections.
Yeah, never waste a crisis is the best advice you can have in politics. And Labour are using this. And I think Katie's absolutely right. The sense of theatre was palpable at the weekend. You saw MPs putting onto social that they were getting onto flights. They weren't complaining they were coming back from holiday. They're making a virtue of it. And I think that sense of command over the imagery and over the narrative, there's a bit of firmness coming into the Number 10 grid, and that's good for Labour. And it gives the backbenchers some enthusiasm because they're going out on the doorsteps at quite a hard time in the local elections.
It's also been interesting how Beijing has hit back. So you have an added element from when we spoke about this on Sunday, is the Chinese government accusing the British government of politicising trade cooperation, and said the move raised doubts about investment in the UK. Now, how does that fit in with Labour's China reset, which is not meant to call a reset, whereby you have ministers regularly flying to Hong Kong or mainland China, effectively trying to closen ties? And this is one of those areas where the UK has taken a stance that is not going to make that easier. Now, lots of people can argue that's a good thing. And there's questions here about, obviously, the takeover that took place under the Tories.
But in geopolitics, there's now two wannabe hegemons, USA and China. Both of them are autarchies being run like autarchies. One is stable and predictable and the other isn't. And so this relationship with China is part of an ongoing desire to get Chinese foreign direct investment in the UK, but also an acknowledgement that actually China is a stable trading partner. And you know when China will react politically, and you know what it will react politically. So it's much more, you can plan for it. You can plan for the outrage. You can plan for what you're going to do. You can plan that steps down the line. So I think the modern relationship with China that the Labour government's pursuing is going to be, you know, get deeper and deeper.
Mm. Now, the other big news story this afternoon has been the news that the Birmingham bin strike will continue as workers overwhelmingly have rejected a pay deal with the Labour-run city council. Katie, how embarrassing is this for Labour, or is this very much seen as a sort of separate issue, something being dealt with by the council, not the government?
I think it is embarrassing. It can, two things can be true. Lots of true things today on this podcast. Another thing that...
another thing.
Exactly. But you can see it as a separate issue. It's a specific Labour council. But of course, if the, you know, this is on the BBC homepage, the story, you know, Birmingham bin strike to continue is deal rejected. That is a Labour council, Labour run, and it does not reflect well on the Labour Party. And I think lots of people looking in on this are not getting into the specifics of, oh, that's not completely fair or reflective. And yes, Wes Streeting's not been very nice about the Labour run council. People are not paying that much attention, and therefore it's a problem.
John, should the government be doing more to try and end this dispute?
Look, in the end, any strike can be broken if the desire of the employers is strong enough. The employers could bring in people to clear the refuse on a public health basis. They can do a whole set of escalations, and they should make the case, really. I think there's not just the principle that the refuse should be collected because of hazard to public health coming into this hot weather now. They should be thinking there's a principle at stake here, which is the dispute at the heart of this is paying equal money to women workers. It's an equal pay dispute that triggered all this. And Birmingham is a stressed council, been under stress through bad management in the past. But there needs to be a distance with devolution, which is that it's their bed. They've made it, they've got to lie in it. But there should be the firm action. It's quite funny, we've got a Labour mayor who's distanced from this because they don't have the power to cut through the Gordian knot. And this thing is looking for action at a local level. And this was going to be a running sore for Labour, I suspect, over the next 4 years. If you give more power to devolved authorities, whether it is the Scottish Parliament or the Senate in Wales, or it is city region mayors, the accountability should lie with them and the buck should lie with them. And at the moment, there is a danger, and Katie's right about this, of this being, there's local elections coming. What's the big story about local councils? It's Birmingham. It's a Labour-run council. You don't need to join the dots. There's a story there about competence. And we vote for councils, not on ideology by and large, but on competence.
And then just finally, Katie, we've had an update in the election betting case from last year's general election. Craig Williams, the former Conservative MP and aide to Rishi Sunak, has been charged with betting offences by the Gambling Commission, along with 14 other people. Is this still embarrassing for the Conservatives?
Just as we're saying, Birmingham Council is bad for the Labour brand, whether fair or not, and being reflective of the whole government, this is bad for the Tory brand. Mm. It reminds people of a really difficult election campaign where Rishi Sunak was hit by scandal, disaster. And this is another sense of the Tories being in it for themselves. And, you know, we can not get into the specifics of this case right now, and it's been looked at, but it's not what Kemi Badenoch needs.
And if I was Kemi Badenoch, I'd have wanted this case heard sooner. And you're asking questions, why are the police taking so long in what looks like a cut and dried case? Why has it taken so long to bring people to court?
Well, thank you, John. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffeehouse Shots.